Curious City is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org. WBEZ's nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.
What's up, Chicago? I'm Erin Allen, and this is Curious City.
2 at 10, major disappointment tonight in Chicago's LGBTQ plus community following the abrupt closure of this iconic nightclub.
Berlin Nightclub. This place was an institution for the queer community in Chicago. It closed back in 2023 after nearly 40 years in business.
The club's owners blame rising operating costs. The hospitality union Unite Here Local One, which had been working to unionize workers at the club, says employees are heartbroken, calling it, quote, the wrong decision.
Last episode, we heard about a mural that hung boldly front and center above the main bar in Berlin for decades. The place where the club once stood is still vacant, and it's unclear what is going to replace it. Today, we're going to revisit 2023 when Berlin first closed. People still have a lot of emotional connections to the club, so you know 2 years ago there were a lot of raw feelings. The closure happened while negotiations were stalled between the club's owners, Jim Schumann and Joe Webster, and its employees, who organized a union the same year it closed. The union wanted higher wages and health insurance. The owners said those changes would make Berlin, quote-unquote, non-competitive. Then the union claimed the owners stopped communicating and negotiating, according to Block Club Chicago. Honestly, there was a lot of back and forth. We've linked to both statements in the show notes of this episode. In announcing the closure, the owners did not mention the union drive. Instead, they cited, quote, the expenses of increased security, insurance and licensing, equipment, rent, and more, end quote. At that time, I was hosting another podcast at WBEZ, The Rundown. In the weeks after Berlin closed, I started talking to folks who spent a lot of time there, some patrons.
It is so sad that Berlin is closing.
A DJ.
It felt like a secret almost. It felt like something that you wanted to hold very, very close to you because spaces like that really don't exist.
Another DJ.
I know it's just a space, but it did feel like a loss, like a family member or a friend.
And some listeners also left voicemails with their favorite memories and some of their feelings about Berlin closing. We gathered all of those voices together and created an episode for the Rundown podcast, and we're going to play it for you today. I never got a chance to go to Berlin, but hearing from all these folks, I know I missed out. I got the overwhelming sense that Berlin wasn't just another dance hall in a big city full of dance halls. It was a community. It gave people hope. It gave people a home. It invited their weirdness. I get the sense that Berlin was a place to just live and let live.
I remember coming down the steps at the Belmont train station and seeing that facade and going inside, and it was sort of like, it felt so big city-ish.
This is queer writer and historian Owen Keenan.
The thing that amazed me about Berlin was that when I came there in 1984, it was on the edge, and it stayed that way for 40 years. Like, it stayed on the edge.
And when you say on the edge, you mean like on the pulse?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Like where a lot of times clubs that are that way sort of then kind of 3 years later kind of fall away because they're not the place to be anymore.
Oh, I see.
Berlin was the place to be for 40 years.
Right. Stay relevant, you know. Okay. Interesting.
And relevant with young people, too. It didn't age with its audience.
Like, how do you think it kept that relevant edge all over throughout the years?
I have no idea, but whatever. No, I really don't.
Yeah.
Every year I get further and further from, I'll have young people come into town and they'll go, where should we go? And then there'll be a Saturday night. And I said, you know, I'm in bed by 10. I don't know where to, you know, I'm the last person you want to, a 60-year-old man is a gay man is the last person you want to ask, like, where's the hot place to be? Because if I know about it, it's not.
Right, right.
So the fact that Berlin did sort of attracted the same kind of cool audience for 40 years, just, I'm floored by it. I think it was just an incredible achievement. Yeah, it was a wonderful place. And it was the perfect place for me to discover when I discovered it.
Yeah. Tell me about what was up with you at that time and why it was so important.
Well, I think like a lot of people who maybe went to Berlin, for me, it was coming out of like a time of conformity and realizing you were queer and needing to express yourself. And finding a place where different was cool, individuality was important, and it was a place of queer expression, musically, stylistically, persona-wise. People reinvented themselves there, sexually for people. It was just a big place of discovering and a lot of people sort of finding their personal voice.
Yeah. Owen told me that during the peak of the AIDS crisis in the 80s and 90s, places like Berlin were kind of like social media, but IRL.
Pre-internet, bars were also community centers. Mm. That's where you went to get the news. That's where you went to get the papers. Bars like Berlin became so important because that was how we got through the AIDS crisis. Mm. There wasn't a lot of outside help coming. This help was all coming from inside stuff, you know, and our fundraisers were really important. And Berlin was always there. It was always there. Being together and all those things coming together made it much more than a bar. Mm. You know what I mean? That was the saddest thing is it isn't like, oh, this bar is closing after 40 years. That's not the sad part. That's sad, but the sad thing is all those memories and all those memories of so many people who aren't there and all that stuff. When you don't have that facade with kind of the jaunty lettering to see when you come down the Belmont train station, it makes you feel at risk for like losing those memories as well.
So that's the story that I tell about Berlin, is it was just like a home.
This is DJ All The Way Kay. She was a resident DJ at Berlin Nightclub for more than 15 years. I asked her to visualize it for me. When you open the door at Berlin, what do you see?
I would say a little bit of everything. You know, it's dark, but there's still bright lights. There's a lot of dancing. There's a lot of character, you know, both within the club and like the patrons themselves as well. Like you will always see somebody dressed however they want to express themselves. It could be leather, it could be lace, it could be a clown suit. Like you honestly, like you kind of never knew what you were walking into, but you knew that it was going to be exciting.
Kay says she got into DJing at Berlin through the Stardust family. which is a group of friends that started throwing weekly parties and community events at Berlin in the late 2000s. Kay says a big part of Stardust was bringing in celebrity guests.
Drop some names.
About early Berlin celebrities for us, like Cakes to Killa, Megan Thee Stallion, Lizzo. There's so many queer and or alternative or other, you know, celebrities. Brooke Candy. I could go on and on for some of these names.
Along those lines, like, what did Berlin represent for you as a space?
For me, honestly, it was just freedom. It was a little bit of trouble at times, too, you know, because it being like so dark and so alternative, it felt like a secret almost. It felt like something that you wanted to hold very, very close to you, because spaces like that really don't exist. And once things become like a little bit more popular, then things become complicated and it's harder to maintain that type of unity sometimes.
Talk about like making that transition from like a patron to like working there, kind of getting into those inner workings.
It felt like you were becoming a part of the foundation of like its existence. I mean, even as patrons, like you feel like that as well because you are supporting the bar. But, you know, being able to go down in the basement of any place like that feels special.
Does it feel like the closing of Berlin kind of has made these types of all-inclusive spaces more scarce?
Yeah, but they've always like kind of been, not say always been scarce, but for my generation, they've been fairly scarce. So unfortunately, when we do lose a space like this, I don't personally see things coming back that have like the same energy. But I also understand that like we don't move forward without change. So it's kind of up to us to figure out how to create spaces like that or, you know, revive that sort of energy.
Greg House was also a DJ at Berlin. He says he's kind of Berlin's unofficial archivist.
I guess because I was so passionate about the venue, just by default became its archivist, I suppose you could say. It's not exclusively a queer space, but it is a significant part of Chicago queer history. And I think it's important that these sort of things be preserved and that years from now, when the place has been closed, people will still understand that part of our history.
I asked Greg the same thing I asked DJ All The Way K. Tell me what you see when you open the front door.
The thing about Berlin, it was just one dark room. There were four bars and one main bar, which had two bars and then two. So it was like basically a dance box. You couldn't escape the visuals and you couldn't escape the music.
Yeah.
On the main bar side, the music was a little bit quieter so people could actually have a conversation. But for the most part, you're in there and it's, especially on a crowded night, the whole place was just electric and you would feel the energy in all, every corner of the room. And there were so many nights like that, either that I've experienced both as a DJ and a patron, someone who wanted to come in on my night off to see someone perform or see someone DJ. It feels like it was so much bigger of a space than it was because of the energy of it on its best days and its best nights.
Greg, as a person who has worked and been a patron of Berlin for so long, I imagine you're pretty involved with the community really closely. And I wonder if you can talk about what the closure is going to mean for people who worked there, who made art there, and who really felt like it was a home for them.
Well, I think, I mean, and I've been slowly but surely reaching out to other friends in the community. It happened right before Thanksgiving, and it's just been a hard thing to really talk about. I mean, it's sort of, I know it's just a space, but it did feel like a loss, like a family member or a friend. And I think if a lot of people are feeling that, I think a lot of people, this is the type of place, myself included, that gave them opportunities that maybe some other venues wouldn't have given them 10 years ago because their drag was too weird or their music was too weird, or they were a person of color that wouldn't be able to play on Halsted Street back in the day that could play at Berlin, or, you know, the trans community. I mean, there were so many people who were being showcased there that weren't getting these opportunities other places. And it was a space that would take chances in ways that other venues wouldn't.
Hi, my name is Andy. I live in Bucktown.
Hi, my name is Damon Green.
My name is Emily Goldstein. My pronouns are they, them.
Chris, also known as Chrissy Beatface or Miss Chrissy.
My name is Timothy French.
Hey, it's Lisa Pacinovich.
I'm calling about memories about Berlin.
I am leaving a message regarding my favorite moment at Berlin.
Back in the mid-80s, my friends and I would go to the clubs, the Lucky Number, Neo, Tux, all the fringe kind of bars to dance and listen to music. But when the bars closed at 2 a.m., we would head over to Berlin because Berlin had the best music, and they had these stages in the middle of the floor. I don't even know if there were stages, there were boxes. Anyway, we would all take turns, and you could dance your heart out on the little box, and everybody would see you, and it was a place to, you know, see and be seen. I'm 64, and I'm so glad they were around for 40 years. It was a great club.
Halloween 2018, after the party I went to, ended up at Berlin. I'd never been in a place that was really like that before, where it felt like everyone was doing their own thing, but also everyone was there in it together. So I'll definitely miss Berlin.
My most favorite moment was when they used to host Vogue for Tots. It was a wonderful event, especially getting the ballroom community in that space and celebrating like queer Black and Brown individuals. It was just a wonderful event to participate in. And yeah, that was my memorable moment.
My name's Ollie. I'm from Oklahoma City, and I first went to Berlin this summer. It was a super memorable experience. I saw a woman smash a bottle on stage and crawl in glass and bleed everywhere. So, yeah, I would say that's probably my favorite memory. It's my only memory of Berlin.
Hey, this is Daniela. I live in Lakeview. And in 1990, when people didn't come out as easily, a guy I went on a date with when I was in college took me to go dancing at Berlin. And when I saw him with the other guys having more fun than with me, I realized, hey, I think we're just going to be friends. That's my Berlin memory.
It is so sad that Berlin is closing.
Berlin was just such a great safe space for people like myself and others who don't normally fit into, I don't know, whatever society is.
And I remember the first time I went, I felt like I had found my space, my nightclub, my going out spot. And after a couple of years, I started doing drag, and Berlin was the first place that I went out to when I was in drag and met so many amazing queens and folks in the drag community in Chicago.
I turned 21 during lockdown, and I, like many, realized that I was transgender, non-binary during the pandemic. I had been waiting for so long to go to Berlin. And then the first time I went to Berlin, I was surrounded by people who were just like me for the first time in years. It was like looking in a giant mirrored disco ball and seeing myself in fractals around the room. I just remember a stranger called me beautiful for the first time. It was this major moment of feeling finally seen as who I am and who I've always been.
We closed Berlin down. Everyone had left and we were the only ones there, like hanging out with the employees and like dancing. So when I think about Berlin, I think about that great memory.
Hi, this is Derek Lundgren, age 33. I have a lot of memories at Berlin Nightclub, which recently closed due to some of the cancel culture kids. One of my favorite memories there possibly was performing under my performer named Michael Phoenix as Violet Beauregard from Willy Wonka in a fat suit doing the Oompa Loompa song, but in the style of Screamo. I performed many odd acts like that at the Harem of Oddities in Berlin.
I will sadly miss Berlin Nightclub. I think it's so sad of what has happened and wish there could have been some kind of negotiating.
I am sad that it does not exist anymore, but I hope that whatever comes next in that space has a similar level of dedication to the community, but also pays its employees a living wage.
It's sad, but I don't feel in good conscience that even if I was still living in Chicago, that I could have a good night out at Berlin if the workers weren't being treated right. So, yeah.
Definitely miss it. I'd miss that community. So I hope that others can find another safe place to be and express themselves and feel safe. Thank you.
Thanks.
Rest in peace, Berlin. I will miss you.
Big thank you to Ollie, Andy, Daniela, Timothy, Chris, Lisa, Damon, Derek, Jessica, and Emily. Now, before I let Owen, Greg, and Kay go, I asked them if they thought something else could pop up in Berlin's place, or whether the journey could continue.
Yes, I think it's possible. But I think it takes sort of like timing and magic and the right combination of people, you know, the right mix at the right time.
Yeah.
And I'm hopeful that that will happen, because I really hope that there's that sense of belonging that so many young queer people of that age really need to find. So, I mean, as someone who's older, I really hope that happens.
Yeah.
I needed it, and the younger people deserve to have it.
It's slightly difficult for me to conceptualize that as I've gotten older, because we were so less inhibited when we were younger, you know, like young and wild and free. It was kind of the vibe at the time. Whereas now I'm like old and cautious and rowdy. So like there's definitely like a balance in between all of those things. But we also have to kind of sit and think about like what that looks like in the long run, because in order for us to continue to have spaces like that, they also have to be sustainable, not just for the vibe, but for the, you know, the employees and stuff like that too.
Yeah.
I'm sure there will be other places that open. There's always something new, and I would love for something that has that spirit to flourish in Chicago. And I'm hoping that that will come around again one day. But, you know, for now, it's just that is going to be a big void.
The energy in the community will not be lost. I know it feels like there's some division in between things, but this is also a great opportunity for people to listen to each other and really just figure out what we need in order to survive, not only as part of the community, but if we want to build something like this for the kids that come up after us as well.
Yes, give it up for Tessa Baby! Keep giving it up, it's never enough.
This was an encore presentation of WBEZ's The Rundown podcast for Curious City. It was produced by me and Justin Bull, with help from Sarah Stark and editor Ariel Van Cleve. Susie Ahn is the editor for Curious City. A big thank you to our guests, queer historian Owen Keenan, DJ Greg House, and DJ All The Way K. Greg let us use some archival footage from Berlin. You can learn more about him on his Instagram at DJ Greg House, and that's H-A-U-S. DJ All The Way K is still spinning all across Chicago. You can catch her at Beauty Bar and at Nobody's Darling. And Owen Keenan has written dozens of books about queer history. You can check them out at owenkeenan.com. And that's Owen, K-E-E-H-N-E-N.com. Curious City is a production of WBEZ Chicago and is a part of the NPR network. If you have questions about Chicago and the region, send them our way at curiouscity@wbez.org or visit us at wbez.org/curiouscity. I'm Erin Allen. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you next week.